This is a Doxcast, not an Argon Soxcast, or a Bendis and Loxcast. Now I'm hungry. This is a Doxcast. It's a nerdy Toxcast. Discuss a Moxcast with Rich Early and friends.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another mid-range episode of the Doxcast. I am your co-host, Josh Trumbo, and with me, as always, is the Trontacular Rich Early. Rich, how are you doing this podcast?
Nice magic references. Those
Thank
were very
you.
Good, Josh. I'm impressed. So.
I do my homework.
We're here for another great episode for, once again, just for housekeeping. We record podcasts in a block live on Twitch, and then from there we repost one a week after that. So tonight we are obviously, as I speak, recording. So that's exciting. So,
Let's hope we are. Otherwise we're just all sitting around a table talking to the microphone.
Which is good.
Regular show star Brad Meixner.
That's me.
And we are here with a longtime denizen of the Paradox Magic the Gathering tables and now worldwide superstar, Corey Baumeister.
I'm blushing.
Yeah, so locally, I mean, like most people know Corey, but, you know, coming out of the shadow of your older brother, Brad Nelson, to prove that you're the better player, is that what we're doing right now?
You know, I'm trying. He's got some big shoes to fill, literally and metaphorically, so.
I just want to make sure Brad is listening and hears that, but but he used to say that about you anyway, like, you know, so, but, I mean, the coolest thing, you've done a lot of cool things, but, I mean, this goes back a couple of years, but the Coliseum, I still think is, like, the coolest thing ever that happened to anyone. So.
Oh, 100%. Like, I mean, that was our first real Magic trip that we got to do, and we got to do something that was so out of the realm for both of us that, and it's something we get to look back on for a whole life and say that we did, and proof that we were there in the Coliseum living it up.
Yeah, if for anybody who doesn't know, like Brad and Corey did a feature for it was a pro tour, correct? And but they got to go into the Coliseum in Rome and play Magic the Gathering.
Tourists looked at us quite weird when we were shuffling up Magic cards, playing it on the tumble stones there, you know?
And the loser was fed to the lions.
Yeah. Well, Brad's not here now, is he? So,
exactly.
Yeah.
We know who won.
So, real quick, you've got a lot going on in Magic. We're going to talk Dominaria mostly, but you've got a lot going on in your career, which is awesome. You're sort of building yourself out of just playing, right? And really establishing a career. Tell us about that just real quick.
Yeah. Well, so I've been able to get into writing some articles and doing some video content. One thing that you really have to do when it comes to playing Magic, you can't just grind it out and, you know, succeed on only tournament results alone. That's exhausting. But I got a weekly column at TCG Player called Dropping Bombs with Corey Baumeister.
You don't get to mention that in an airport, though, do you?
That's, no, I don't. And I've said bombs on so many times on my social media feeds, I'm pretty sure I'm flagged by the government by now. So.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. And you're probably taking that to the next step and making a move as well, right? Or is that all private information?
Yeah, nope, that's all in the open. I think I'm planning on moving to Colorado area to, you know, mediate on flights for all these trips and stuff. And there's a lot of pro Magic. It's a really good scene down there. And hopefully get a job down at Direwolf. Game designing is kind of my plan, so. Yeah, it's exciting. Big stuff happening, that's for sure.
Oh, you want a game? Sorry, tell me, say this again.
Yeah, I think I got a couple friends down there that said that they could try to get me in on the game designing thing at a company called Direwolf.
Okay.
The people who made Clank?
Yep. I think they're making Eternal right now, an epic. There's already like 9 Platinum Pros that work for them, so I know they accept the lifestyle of traveling on weekends and stuff, so I think it would be really fun.
That'd be amazing.
Yeah, that sounds terrific. I mean, we're all just out here doing the best we can, right?
Exactly. So. One day at a time.
Well, we're all coming off of Dominaria pre-release weekend, and it's, you know, the most successful pre-release, the most exciting anticipated set in several years. You and I have been around forever. I don't know if we can ever see that, like, Zendikar-ish, you know, thing again. But, I mean, it's certainly nice to feel like we're playing with people who were excited as they were doing, like, RTR or Battle for Zendikar or stuff like that. And that's what it reminds me of a lot in terms of the era right now. So it's
For
just
sure.
It's just such a – it's just exciting.
Yeah, there's a lot of players that I've talked to. They're like, "Yep, this is a set that brings me out of retirement." You know, I mean,
right? And that was something like we gave out new DCI cards on an unprecedented level. I mean, I brought over. I showed up here at like 11:45 before the noon tournament on Saturday. I brought 8 people to the event center who didn't know where it was. You know, and it's like, oh, this is fantastic.
Oh yeah.
So the question I always have then is like, where were the 8 people who filled in those same numbers from the last one? Why but that's magic for you. But,
exactly.
So what'd you think during the pre-release? Like, did you get a what's your take on the limited set?
Yeah, I mean, I played 3 of them here, and I played a couple online and stuff, and I think it is just like interaction and like fun game states are back, you know? And that's something that maybe we've been missing on the previous sets when it comes to like tribal sets or something like that. Everything is kind of done for you. You know, your decks are pre-designed when it's tribes. You're like, okay, I'm going to be a dino deck. I got these 4 dinos. I'm going to be merfolk. Like here, you have the option to just do so much. There's good fixing, powerful spells in every color, you know, good removal is a key to really make games be drawn out. The 2 drops aren't overpowered, so you're not, you know, losing the game if they play a good 2 drop into a 3 drop. Like, it's a really well-balanced set that I think people are really liking, and it's really good for competitive play as well.
And I think it marries that with, you know, there's not a card you pick up from the set that doesn't remind you of something from years gone by. Even like the worst common in the set has still got something flavorful about it that, you know, is like, oh, I remember Fallen Empires when I, you know, did this, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, that's what's really cool. And I think, you know, like for me, I've never been a big story guy, and I still am not, but like the flavor text, the art, the names of the cards, like there's just something just right about this set. So
agreed.
But and you can't do this set all the time, you know, like they had to wait, and doing this one at the 25th anniversary, I think was absolutely the right place to do it, because you can only get away with this like once or twice when you want to pull this nostalgia cord, you know.
Exactly. So. Yeah, if you keep bringing back the same stuff, people are just like, okay, come on, let's bring some freshness to it.
Yep. So what are you testing with this? Like, what are you getting ready for standard? What's your operation right now?
Yeah, so the only standard testing I've done, you know, I mean, like most people, I am pro tour testing right now and stuff, but I'm mainly just drafting a ridiculous amount of Dominaria. Like, it is way too fun to pass up, but played an Esper control deck today to make one of my videos that's coming out on Thursday. And, I mean, just the interaction with the new Teferi. Have you guys seen this card?
Yep.
Yeah, 5 mana, tick up, draw a card, you get to untap 2 land, and then there's that enchantment that exiles a tapped creature. So, like, you can play that on turn 5, tick up, you know, still take out something tap at your own end step. Like, the cards are just insanely powerful, and it's going to shake up Standard a lot.
Yeah,
you know?
Like, that Teferi, when we did our set review, that was one of the cards we talked about the most, about, like, Planeswalkers have to be able to protect themselves in order to be good.
Yep.
That one does even more than that, because it gives the control player still the ability to do something after playing its big, bomby card.
Exactly. So. And you know, the way I think at it, it protects itself twice. You know, like, the tick-down effect, it's the last threat on the table, that works fine. But if you need to tick up, and they have 2 creatures, you have a removal spell for one of them and let it get attacked, you know, it really catches you up. So I think that card is going to be way more valuable than the hype.
The one thing that worries me about cards like that and in this set, if the environment is fast, we're not really going to get to play a lot of these cards or to get to enjoy them. And I'm just not enough of a all-in player to know, you know, where we're headed. So
yeah. And I mean, it's tough, you know, because the Magic right now has been all aggressive all the time, and you know, there's that 3 mana, that triple red card, the Chain Maker. I'm not sure the name
chain
of the card.
Chain Leader or something like
exactly.
that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, like, that card is messed up.
Well, yeah, and War Chief, that guy, Siege Gang, like, right in this set, right? Like,
yep.
So.
Yeah, it easily could be a thing, you
Skirt
know?
Skirt Prospector, right? Which one was, like, one of those was reprinted. I can't remember which
Skirt
one.
Skirt Prospector, yeah, the sack out of red, yeah. Yep. And I played against that today online. It's in that blue-red God Pharaoh's Gift deck, and it's a great home there. You know, you sack it, you draw a card, discard, and still can combo off, get God's Pharaoh's Gift, and so I mean there's a lot of Blast from the Past cards I'm seeing, and it is nostalgic. I mean, first time I cast a Sarah Angel when I was over here, I legitimately had goosebumps. So.
Oh, goosebumps.
Oh yeah.
So how do you, so okay, I used to say this with your brother. Like one mm-hmm. of my the day that I knew Brad was different than other people. Okay, it was the
day
first
you met him.
No, it was when he was testing for the first big regionals that he went to in Minneapolis, right? Mm-hmm. With the red blue. Oh my God. Come on, Brian. Well, it was kind of a storm deck, right? But it was like just that fast little red blue deck, and like no one was playing this deck. Never even heard of it. And everybody was testing all this, you know, online stuff or whatever. And Brad's got this completely off the wall deck, and
yep.
which wasn't off the wall, but I mean, you know, like at the time, I was like, this guy, like, great, go 2-4. I don't care. You
yeah,
know? Like,
yeah.
But then he top eights or wins or whatever, right? But mm-hmm. like and places and goes to nationals on the back of this deck or whatever. Yep. And I remember thinking, like, for the first time, it's like, so we all build decks that were good last week, and Brad's already thinking about decks that are good next week.
Exactly.
Know?
I mean,
and I'm not talking about Brad here. I'm just using this as an example, right? Like, so when you get your hands on a new set, how do you do that? Like, how does your mind take the cards that are here and make that leap? Like, what is it that allows you to, like, what's the process? Or
yeah. Well, I mean, okay, so there's two different distinct differences and like examples of when me and Brad do that, and like, and most of this I have learned so much from Brad, and you kind of get jaded when you hang out and talk to somebody so much that's your brother that you don't really realize like what a special player and what a special mind he has for the game. You know, I mean, little did I know, we were just having fun coming to card tournaments, and now he's, you know, quote unquote the best standard player and metagame predictor mm-hmm. like in the world right now, and like you have no idea when you're doing it. But for a GP, you can see the deck lists that do well, right? You know, you see this deck won. And most people, like you said, copy those deck lists and play them the next week at the GP.
Maybe change three sideboard cards.
Exactly.
Or something,
play something to make yeah. it good in the mirror or
yep,
something.
Yep.
But like one thing Brad taught me, and now that I've been really adopting, is just, okay, what strategy beats this? And when me and Brad had our streak of GPs earlier in this last year where we both top eighted two in a row and then I top eighted the next two, that's all we did is what deck beats our deck from last week, you know, like, and just kind of next leveling ourselves. And I think that's a lot easier when a metagame is already solved, like a GP format. But when it comes to a Pro Tour format, I mean, that's the reason we go 2 weeks early. It takes a team of people to build this stuff out of nothing, you know?
Yep.
And I'm around a large group of Magic players that are much better at the game than I am, you know? So it really just takes a lot of work when it comes to building the next good Pro Tour deck.
Do things start with a card? So, like, going back to what you said, you know, you're talking about Teferi, right?
Mm-hmm.
So do you start by going, okay, I trust my mind. My mind yeah. tells me this card's really good, right?
Yeah.
So what do I do with this card? Like, is a deck exactly. built around an individual card, or is it like you look through cards and you trigger, like, hey, there's three cards here, I'll do something similar?
Yeah.
Like, what... You know, I mean, is there any secret to it?
So I think the biggest secret is there's always a Star City Games event 2 weeks before the Pro Tour. And that's the first time that people have to dive into Standard. So initially what we do there is we look at that data very carefully, because it doesn't matter that these are players that may be playing weak decks or something. But these decks will be copied by PTQers, you know, by even pro teams that are going to start with them. And you look in there and you see the pattern of what kind of stuff these decks are doing. And then you notice what takes advantage of these decks. And that's when it comes down to what you were saying, like a specific card. Like when we went to Pro Tour, I want to say Japan, like Aetherworks was the card that was out there. And we're like, okay, this sure. card is messed up. It's probably a mistake. We need to find a way to exploit it and make the best deck possible. So we have a team that goes on that, and then we have a team that goes on trying to build more obscure stuff that maybe isn't going to be as known. But it all starts with identifying like what people are doing, and then really just finding the broken cards, building a good shell around it.
Yeah. How often do you start with an idea, play it a bunch, and just give up on it? Is that like the majority of what happens?
Yeah, pretty much. There's a specific yeah. people on our team that will never let a horse die, and we'll just have to we'll have to go up to him and just be like, come on, buddy, let's just step away from the Bantus, okay? Just go play with some good cards over there and get yourself a reality check.
Yeah, I remember like trying to play poker when I realized like it's not about the right move, it's about eliminating all the wrong moves, you know, one
yeah.
at a time, which, you you know, like, is nearly impossible. But
exactly. that's how it is. You know, I mean, there's a lot of our, we have like team meetings all the time, and we'll have a deck and be like, this deck's been doing good. And then somebody will chime in and be like, but how does it beat this card? You know, this card's going to be here. Do we really want to be playing against, you know, 40% bad matchups or whatever, you know? So it's a lot of communication, too, at the end of the day. But
sure.
Yeah.
So I'm just kind of curious. I played Magic way back in the day and got out of it, and so I'm not very up on everything. But, you know, when I was playing, I was very casual, and I found a style that I liked. I really liked red-blue because I liked countering stuff and I liked burning stuff.
Sure.
I just liked having the two-handed approach there. So how much of that comes into finding good decks? Like, do you have a certain style of play that you enjoy, and then do you try to work that in, or is it mostly about finding the right cards, you know, or to what degree does your favorite type of Magic deck come into that?
Sure. Well, I mean, yeah, so my favorite style, and I think the most important thing when it comes to what I look for in a deck is it going to win?
Yeah.
My favorite style is winning at Magic tournaments. But I mean, aside from that, like, I steer away from certain things. Like, I will almost never shuffle up a control deck at a Pro Tour. You know, like, there is just so much random stuff going on. There's so... Every control deck looks amazing on paper, but in a Pro Tour, you're playing against so many random decks. Not everything's established yet, where so much can go wrong, you know? And I learned... And Brad has the same mentality when it comes to this, and that's, you know, probably where I learned it. But I stick away from that. I really like... mid-range, like, control or aggressive decks that can also play a late game, you know, like blue-black mid-range from this last deck with Scarab God can be aggressive, can go the long game, you know. I never like being all-in strategies or trying to react to everything strategies. I really like the middle ground because it lets you outplay your opponent, and, you know, that's a huge part about Pro Tours is there's a lot of good players, but there's also players that are going to copy any kind of deck and don't exactly know what you may be doing, you know?
And every one of those strategies works for a certain type of person. So, I mean, you kind of answered the question. You did identify, like, this is the style that I kind of go for, you know? But we've had players for 20 years who go to, you know, previously PTQs and whatever, you know, like, who play, like, mono-red all-in, right?
Yep.
Because they're not, you know, like... It would be the dream of a lifetime that they hit the one Pro Tour, right?
Yeah.
And so when you take that deck, like, people over and over and over again, we had top eights or top fours. I mean, you don't usually get all the way, but those all-in decks can put you right there with that one-game shot, basically.
Exactly. And, I mean, like, a good friend of mine, John Rolfe, he just top foured, not this last Pro Tour, but the Pro Tour before, just locked platinum. But he has played mono-red only, like, since Hezeret was printed. That's all he's played, and he's had extreme success with it. You know, he's a phenomenal player, but it's his comfort zone, and, you know, I think especially that comes really true when it comes to Modern. Like, that's a format that doesn't change a lot, and then you get rewarded for knowing your specific deck and your specific plan. So, I mean, I think it is a viable strategy. You got to be able to recognize when it's not good, though. You know, I mean, that's the biggest point, you know? Like, jam mono red when right now the most popular deck is mono white Martyr Sands. You're not going to have a good time.
Yeah. And then get mad.
Yeah, you're going to have a mad day and not know why your Mog Fanatics aren't getting there.
Yeah, right. No, I mean, that adaptability is big, and that was another thing, you know, going back to early days, like, around here, I remember, like, I would play a lot of FNMs, and, you know, I would build, like, a net deck or whatever, but other people would, they'd build a net deck, but then what they would do is they would, like, sideboard for the local meta, right?
Yeah.
I would never do that, right? And so then I would be playing a meta, and all of a sudden these sideboard cards come in that are designed, like, just to beat my deck, basically.
Yeah.
Not
yeah.
me, but I mean, like, you know, because they know people are playing deck X, right?
Oh, yeah.
Thing. So, like, that was, again, you know, sort of, like, thinking the same way, right? Like, thinking outside the box or a next level above what was happening. So.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, when I played PPTQ, I mean, I came to every single PPTQ you had back in the day when I was still allowed to play them.
Yeah.
And there were specific times when I would play the deck I was going to play at FNM, and then the next day there would be four cards that are just never played in a sideboard in, like, a specific guy. He's like, yeah, I just want to beat you, man.
Well, that was another thing. We would always tell people, like, on Friday night, people would be like, oh, I don't want to play my deck. I'm playing tomorrow. We're like, why not? Like, you're one of 70 people who are playing tomorrow. Like,
exactly.
You know, like, I'd rather you knew your deck and knew what you were doing than, you know. Like,
than miss triggers on the next day for your PPTQ. That's how it was for me. I'd come and practice, make sure I remembered to put the dice on, you know? Like,
oh, yeah, absolutely.
Magic Online and real life is a bit different. You got to warm up a little bit.
Well, that's a fun thing about you has been, we'll miss you, is like you're in the Pro Tour one weekend, and then you're here for FNM like 4 days later. Like, it's just, you know, like, it's pretty awesome when, you know, and a lot of shops have got people like that. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens next, because we've had you for many, many, many years, and you're all grown up now,
or something. I feel since Brad's lived here.
Yep. So
yeah, always. This has been my first home was Collector's Universe back in the day, and this has always been my second home. Now I love it here. You know, I'm continue to play anytime I'm in town. That's for sure.
What do you want in the next, you know, 3 years? Like, what are your goals?
One of my biggest goals that I really want to accomplish, and I've been trying so hard these last 2 years, is to hit platinum. You know, hit platinum, get my professional player's card. You know, Brad's given me his for 8 years in a row, and every year I sigh, put it in my car, you know. I really want to hit platinum. It's it changes what you can look at Magic as. You know, it's $15,000 to show up to tournaments, $3,000 for each Pro Tour, and $500 for 6 Grand Prix. And it really lets you define it as a job instead of a glorified hobby, you know? And I mean, writing and stuff is all great and stuff, but that extra push where you're just getting paid just to show up because you've done so well, like, it's something I've been really trying to do, and I missed by a little bit last year, and I'm sitting really good for it so far. So it'd be a little disappointing if I don't get it, but, you know, it's a tough game, so.
How do you feel about I don't want to put you too controversially on the spot. There's the comparison between e-gaming and Magic the Gathering and the money that's available between the two. And obviously, it's just a different thing. We don't have the same audience in physical Magic that they do in League of Legends online, you know, or whatever, right?
But
or Dota 2. I don't know what's hot. I don't know what the kids are playing this year. But,
you get
the idea. Do you guys talk about that or think about that? Or does it not matter all that much?
I mean, it definitely matters, because there's even, you know, pros on, we have 2 teams of 6 for our Pro Tours, and I mean, there's some pros on some of the teams that just aren't making enough to consider it a good income whatsoever, you know. And I mean, like, the upper 1% of the 1%, you know, makes a great living doing this. But yeah, I mean, there's streamers playing games out there that are making $500,000 in a month. You know, I mean, I read an article that there's a guy that streams this Fortnite, this battle game, and makes $500,000 in a month. Magic will never be there, but I also know, like, my strengths, it comes in card games. You know, I've never been a big gamer outside of that. And, you know, while it sucks and I wish, you know, there would be more money put into it, I also, at this point, couldn't see myself jumping for just the money. You know, like, I love the game, and I'm pretty sure I always will.
Well, you've gotten enough experiences, and you love the game that, I mean, you got to be happy in life, right?
Oh,
like, you've got to just, not just you right now, but I mean, a person in general. Like, you have to sacrifice something to be, if you're in a happy place.
Exactly. And I mean, that's the thing, is like, I wake up every morning very happy with what I'm doing. You know, I mean, there's sacrifices I got to make, you know, being away from Tori for 2 weeks, Tori, my fiance, being away from her for like 2 weeks at a time to go test for a Pro Tour 4 times a year. You know, it's a sacrifice for me, and it's a even bigger sacrifice for her. So, I mean, there's definite negative aspects of it. But, you know, if the negative outweighed the positive, I wouldn't be doing it, you know.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
I had a follow-up, and my brain just went
sure.
Brad, do you have any questions as we've gone along here?
Okay, you're writing for TCG Player.
I am, yep.
What do you find playing physical Magic versus your recording on Magic Online? I mean, drastically different, correct? Or do you feel that they're similar enough that they've... Because, I mean, like, when you're recording for your content, you're sitting there talking to the screen.
Exactly,
explaining your plays. Mm-hmm. Do you feel that is a completely different creature rather than sitting at a table not having to explain yourself, being completely in your head?
Oh, for sure. For sure. I mean, like, having going to just sit down at, like, a Grand Prix, you know, compared to what I'm doing or recording and stuff online, like, I feel like even when I'm at the table, those thoughts that I'm saying out loud are in my head. I'll be like, okay, so I want to, you know, I want to play Teferi, but I want to wait till next turn because I can tick up and have counter backup, you know? So, I mean, it's different in that sense, but it's also the same in that sense because I'm just already have those thoughts. Now I just talk to myself, you know? But I do learn and practice much better when I don't have to explain myself.
Sure.
You know, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So you're doing a lot of additional testing, not recorded then?
Your
own personal... Do you view it as learning or is it enjoyment? Is that what you do for fun or is that what you do to better yourself for the next Grand Prix or Pro Tour?
Just like testing outside of recording?
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, a little bit of both. Like, I mean, every single week, I would say either the next weekend or the weekend after, I have either a Grand Prix, a Magic Online Championship event, Pro Tour. So there's always something I have to get ready for. So, you know, I get to take the good with the bad. Like, personally, I like Standard a lot more than Modern. I don't mind Limited, but I'm not that great at it. But whatever is coming up, that's what I'm going to be playing. And I consider it fun. It's still the game I love, you know, but some weeks are more fun than others. Like, next week, I got a Modern tournament online, so I'm going to be playing Black Red Hollow 1, and Modern's pretty much flipping coins and stuff lately, so some testing is funner than others, but yeah, still enjoyable, regardless. Yeah.
Our last guest was a comic creator, and he detailed a lot of experiences about that I was very familiar with, and Josh and Brack is of our age and things like that, you know, and we all know, like, a lot of us know, too, that feeling of being in the card room, you know, playing at FNM, all those thrills and exciting things, right? But we don't all take that to the next level. And, I mean, first of all, we're all different players. It isn't even necessarily that Corey's better than Brad is better than Ray. I mean, we're all different players, you know?
Yeah.
So, but what takes that, you know, why do you think, you know, you make a leap but other people don't necessarily do it? And I don't want a qualitative answer. You know what I mean? Like, what moved you? What motivated you to make it into a career? I mean, you were going to college, right? And things like that. Like, what? And you weren't going to do this.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, I played Magic, you know, for about 11 years or so on and off. And I've had success on the Pro Tour before I took a break to go to school. And then I've came back. But, you know, maybe it was a little misdirection in my life where maybe the career I was going into, I wasn't feeling it necessarily. And I won two PTQs back to back. And I just kind of took it as a sign. And I was like, Brad's been doing it. I've always had the most fun when I'm like testing for a pro tour, when I'm living that life, but I've never given it my all. So what it really came down to me, what drove me, is regret. And I would have had regret if I never tried it and never, you know, actually put in my all to see if I could do it. You know, like, if I went to those two pro tours and I scrubbed them out, I was going back to school, you know, no regrets whatsoever, you know, but that's not how it came. And I still no regrets. That's the main thing I wanted to do in my life, you know, basically.
And what makes you the Magic player that you are? Again, different, not better, you know, like, what are your skills? Can you self-identify those?
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, like, I'm not gonna, you know, lie to you and say that I have the deck building prowess or the metagame predictions like Brad does. You know, I'm just very good at playing the game. I'm good at dissecting, you know, complicated board states. I think what drew me to competitive Magic is I've always just been very good at combat, you know, and I think combat's a very easy thing to mess up, you know, and I think that's what really got me there. And since I've been a pro, I've been getting very good at fine-tuning a deck list. You know, I'm still very bad at coming up with the shell we play at the Pro Tour. You know, that's Brad's job. That's Seth's job. But when they have a shell, I'm very good at figuring out, like, okay, I don't think we should have these. This should be this. You know, this should be this. I think little tweaks like that are my strength. And then just playing, I would say.
Well, along those lines, you're talking about deck building. Do you think Dominaria is going to mess with deck building because you have so many legendaries and you're not going to want your full playset of four because that creates multiple dead cards.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, Hazoret Red, other than Hazoret, you don't have any legendaries.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
maybe it's like, Chandra a few, yeah, but yeah.
But you just, you're burning to a point where it's just like, if the card's in my hand, I can cast it. Whereas, do you feel that's going to mess up what a standard deck looks like, where it's going to be a lot less 4Xs, and it's going to be like a 2, a 3, a 2, maybe a 4 if it's a 1, you know, like a 2 or a 1 drop that you want to hit?
Yep. And I think you make a really good point there. Like, I mean, you're not going to have 4 of that Baneslayer Angel in a deck. Even though today I did have 4 in main and sideboard. But, you know, against Mono Red, drop a Baneslayer, that still works.
Yep.
But I think, like, when it comes to different legends... When it comes to different legends in a deck, you may only have 2 of a physical copy, but you might have 2 of that and 2 of a different legend that serve similar purposes.
Sure.
So it's going to change the actual numbers, and it's going to make playing against decks a little harder because you're not. It's not going to be a cookie cutter 4 of, you know, like we've seen in the past. You're like, you know, these legends aren't going to be a 4 of, so you're going to be expecting a lot more from decks. Yeah.
Excellent. Well, we're just about out of time here. So, Rich, is there anything, any last questions or thoughts we want to...
Give us all the secrets. We just want, you know...
Every secret.
Every
secret.
List them off.
Team Genesis is playing... No, I'm just kidding.
What is the immediate future? Where are you headed next and what's going on?
The immediate future, I actually have three and a half weeks off right now, which is like the longest stretch I've had since I've dedicated to this professional magic thing. The next one's the Pro Tour. We got Washington, D.C. is the GP before the PT, where it's a team limited event. I'm going to be testing with reigning, I guess, 2 Pro Tours ago champion Seth Manfield and our good friend Frank Skarin. We're going to be playing sealed there, and then Pro Tour the next weekend in Richmond, Virginia.
That is, we're all doing it. Who's not doing it?
Yeah, exactly. I'll see y'all there.
We're carpooling.
Right? Exactly. 30-hour drive, right?
Yeah.
No big deal.
How about you, Corey? Any final thoughts about the upcoming format or just the state of the game as it is right this second?
Well, I think the format's great. I think people, I got a lot of... friends on Twitter that are professional magic players, and it is so well received right now. People, it's like Christmas morning for professional magic players. Like, they know for the next 3 months they don't have to play a set they don't like. You know, this is going to be enjoyable testing. That's also going to be testing. It's also going to be work. You know, so I think this set is going to bring the game to a whole new level. I think it's really good for casual players too. So it's going to bring that up. Like.
There are swaths of cards in Dominaria that alone would have been the best cards in a different set.
Oh, yeah.
And yet they're all, you know, piled together in this set. There's a lot of interesting things going on with this set in terms of pricing and all kinds of different, like, I think there's so many good cards that are actually competing, and so the prices are low, you know, like, rather than, like, oh, that's the obvious $20 card because it's the best card in the set, or this is the $3 uncommon, or things like that. But, I mean, and you've got so many tools or toys in the toy chest in this set. I think there'll be cards in this set 5 years from now that have been a dollar card that are now $30 because a commander player like breaks, you know, Legend X that was nothing up until that point. I mean, it is actually a crazy set in the in the history of the game, or at least in a long time.
And so. I think you made a good point there, like the fact that it's competing right now for other cards.
Yep.
Like the previous sets, those cards weren't worth anything either, but that's because they weren't competing for anything in standard.
Correct. Yep.
You know, the decks were already made. You know, people already own their team or energy decks. You know, why put any of this new cards? But these new cards are going to make an impact, and they are going to have a lasting stay.
Yeah, and I mean, look, I've been around forever. You've been around forever. I mean, one thing that happens in every rotation is they're I don't know. I'll say 80% of the time, there's a best deck. You know, and we always devolve to the same conversation. Are they going to ban this card and change this format? Mm-hmm. And some there are very degenerative ones, but nonetheless, there tends to be a top tier that filters up every time, and then we get back to the same conversation every time. So it'll be interesting to see like how this format develops this time. So
agreed.
And what's going to happen? I mean, the big thing is what happens next, because this set's attached to. you know, last year's block, right? Forever actually, right? Because the way rotational work. What are we doing with the core set? What's coming in the fall? Where is that going to take the game? You know, is this the beginning of this is how we're going to do standard now? Is this just what this set is, and we're going to be back to like previous sets, you know, I have no idea, right?
Exactly, but that's the exciting part, you know. I mean, it's light on the horizon, and it's an exciting time for Magic, and I think it's only going to be getting better, so yep, I'm excited.
Yep. Bringing players back and exciting current players, and hopefully, like, we need to find future generations of players, too. Like, exactly. I noticed this a lot, like, especially in other games, more than Magic, but I've noticed this a lot in, say, Yu-Gi-Oh! And Pokemon. We're having trouble finding, like, the next judge, you know, the next guy who is the centerpiece of the game in his local community.
Yep.
They're just not there in the same way that they were 10, 15 years ago.
Yep.
And, you know, I mean, Magic, we've had more luck with that, but there is a similar thing going on. So, like, we need revivals.
Exactly. So, you need young people to play, you know? Yep. I mean, I hope everybody that listens to this brings one of their friends to the next pre-release, you know? I mean, that's what it takes, you know? Once people play the game, they love it, you know?
Two last questions. One, this is the important one. The last one will be, well, it's important to you. you're, you know, way back when you're sitting at home in Mandan, or you're here and you're debating between college and Magic. A lot of people are in that boat. A lot of people are, I'm afraid to be me. You know, I'm afraid to take that chance and see what I could become. So I shy away from doing it, and I just do the convenient, safe thing.
Yep.
What's the advice? Like, how, you know, like, you kind of said it, but I mean, if you're talking to that person right now, what can you tell them?
Well, first of all, don't quit school, kids, you know? Yeah. That isn't the moral of this story, is drop out of college and play Magic. It works for one guy, you know?
Yeah.
But, I mean, honestly, I think everybody that is looking to do this has to take a step back and be like, A, is it feasible? And B, would I live with regret if I didn't try it? And, you know, for me, it was an overwhelming feeling that, yes, I would, you know? And that's just something I wasn't okay with in my life, is having regrets, so.
Yeah, no, that was an awesome answer.
Yeah.
So. All right, how do people find you online if they want to talk to you? I mean, they probably already know, but how do they do it?
Yeah, I mean, I got a Facebook. I post my weekly article, Dropping Bombs, on there. And then Twitter, at Corey Ballmeister. Or I think it's just at Corey Bowman, so I don't think they have anything else on Twitter, right?
Yep.
Yeah, so just at that, and post all my articles up there, tournament updates and stuff like that. So.
All right. Thank you, Corey.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me, everyone.
Yep.
You bet. Mm-hmm. And thanks to everyone for tuning in. As always, you can find us, ParadoxCNC.com, at ParadoxCNC on Twitter. We're on Facebook. Stop down at the store. You might run into local legend Corey Baumeister on a Friday Night Magic or some other night. But,
get ready.
Yes. Build a deck just to beat him.
Yeah.
But we of course, will be back with more DoxCast. Like Rich said, we put these out every Monday, so we hope you'll keep tuning in and tune in when we record live. But for now, I think we need to draw this to a close. So thank you for tuning in. We'll see you on the next DoxCast.
This was a DoxCast. Hope you think it rocks, cast. Oh, look at the clocks, cast. Until next time.